people came, not the majority, a few, but it only tells me how the pressure that has built up, how monstrous it was to create these monstrous attacks in one day.
Amir Ahas, longtime Israeli correspondent for Haaretz in the occupied Palestinian territories, usually based in Ramallah. She's author of Drinking the Sea at Gaza, Reporting from Ramallah, and wrote the foreword and afterword to her mother Hannah Levy Haas's Holocaust memoir, Diary of Bergen-Belsen. To see part one of our interview with Amira and also our interview yesterday with Dr. Mustafa Barghouti, visit democracynow.org. I'm speaking tonight in Charleston, West Virginia at the Grassroots Radio Conference, 7:30 p.m. at the Capitol Theater. Visit democracynow.org for details. Oh, and happy birthday to Robbie Caron. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud media sponsor of the Día de los Muertos celebration on Wednesday, November 1st, from 12 to 10 p.m. at The Red on Salmon Street in Portland. Día de los Muertos is an ancient celebration originating from the indigenous people of Mexico. Festivities will include altar creation, muertos face painting, sugar skull decorating, traditional Mexican food, and live musical performances. Again, that's the Día de los Muertos celebration on Wednesday, November 1st, from 12 to 10 p.m. at The Red on Salmon Street, 831 Southeast Salmon Street in Portland.
Brr, it's cold in here. I need a sweater, but one that expresses my values. I know, my limited KBOO Sound of Democracy crew neck. And you can find it at kboo.fm/SOD shirt on the sidebar of the homepage. But there's so many colors. How will I pick? Gray? Red? I know. What about oregano?
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, and it is our fall fun drive. I want to take a minute to thank some recent donors. Thank you, Nancy B., Michael D., Art S., Carol S., and Todd M., and I want to thank all the donors to this fall fun drive. You can donate now by going to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. And now we have the evening news.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this fall membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News, Portland teachers vote for their first ever strike.
The U.S. House has rejected Jim Jordan as speaker for the third time.
And a Portland artist space plans a 12-hour Halloween showcase.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, October 20th, 2023. KBOO is currently in our fall membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Ray Bodwell.
And I'm Josh Salem. Portland teachers will go on strike starting Wednesday, November 1st, after months of bargaining failed to result in an agreement. This would be the first ever teacher strike in the district. The teachers' union reported that 93% of members participated in the vote, with almost 99% voting to authorize the strike. Several issues remain unresolved for their new contract. These include compensation, planning time, class size limits, and student discipline measures. District officials say there's a greater than $224 million gap between their proposal and what the union is asking for. The union said educators won't give up. Its statement said, quote, "Our students deserve safe buildings, smaller class sizes, and added mental health specialists," end quote. The union says management has been unwilling to respond to increasing student needs in Portland schools. The latest collective bargaining agreement expired in June, meaning nearly 4,500 teachers and coaches are working without a contract. Portland Public Schools, or PPS, sent out notice of the strike to families yesterday. If the strike takes place, PPS will close all schools, so no in-person classes or online instruction. PPS will still provide grab-and-go meals for free for all kids ages 1 to 18 at certain locations and times while the strike is on. School-based mental health services will still be offered, either in person or virtually. Staff will be available via email, phone, and virtually if students need college application support. While varsity sports will continue, other extracurricular activities will not take place during the strike. The district says it doesn't yet know if a strike would extend the school year.
Yesterday, protesters rallied at Portland State University for a Palestine solidarity rally. KBOO's Reed Johnson reports.
Yesterday, Portland State student activist groups gathered at the PSU Urban Plaza to protest the ongoing bombing of Palestinian Gaza by the Israeli military. The unifying message was solidarity with the people in Gaza, an immediate ceasefire, and for PSU to divest from Boeing, the world's third largest defense contractor.
I've been thinking a lot about my grandmother, who in 1948, at 7 years old, was forced out of her home by Zionist settlers and walked all the way to Damascus, only to never set foot in her home again. I'm wondering what my grandmother must think right now, still in Syria, she herself, older than the state of Israel, watching another Nakba occur in her lifetime. I've accepted that there will never be a perfect way to express the grief and the rage that I feel. As Palestinians, our grief and rage transcends generations and fuels the fire that will liberate our homeland one day soon.
I'm here today in support of Palestinian lives because my faith compels me, as a Jew, to speak out against the atrocities committed by a country that claims to be worth fighting. With genuine questions about the quote-unquote conflict there. And I'll tell you, I wept the wailing wall to feel the centuries of our people's prayers going up there. And I really, really wept at the border wall. I fell down in the sand at the foot of that monstrous wall with its turrets and silent snipers that loomed at the crossing of Ramallah, its anonymous cold evil. Every part of my being and my body said no. This is not right.
I'm a Palestinian Christian from Gaza. I'm at Christmas today as someone who grew up in Gaza and still has my family there. Our church that we grew up in was bombed today. Hundreds of people were seeking refuge in that church. People are trapped and are dying under the rubble right now, and they are trying to rescue them. There are people who I grew up with that have died in this bombing. Those who have survived are losing their parents, siblings, cousins, aunts, uncles, and grandparents. And we need you all to speak up and demand a ceasefire and stop the bombing in Gaza. There is no justification for bombing a church. There's no justification for bombing a hospital. There's no justification for bombing an innocent person's home.
I spoke with one of the student organizers of the event, with PSU Students United for Palestinian Equal Rights, after the rally, and asked her what she hoped people understood about the day's events.
This proves that the people are with Palestine, that big corporations like Boeing aren't going to buy the people out. Most people know about the situation, know that this is a genocide. They don't support this. They know that the U.S. is lying to them, like they lied about Yemen, they lied about Iraq, they lied about Syria, they lied about Libya. They're not telling the truth this time. Like, we know the pattern. It's the same thing over and over again, and people are showing up to say that, hey, we know what's going on, that this is a genocide, and we want it to stop.
For KBOO News, I'm Reed Johnson.
Portland Public Schools has reached a tentative agreement on the fate of the Grant High School athletic field. It's been 2 months since it was closed to most uses, forcing the school's teams to practice and play in more far-flung locations. The field became unusable after tests showed that the artificial turf had become compacted, which increases the risk of concussions. Parents pushed the school district and the Parks Department to replace the field. They said the city was negligent because they didn't replace the field at the end of its lifespan. The tentative agreement has the Parks Department leasing the field to PPS for 20 years. The school district will pay for improvements and manage the field going forward, including the permit revenue. They'll manage maintenance and security as well. The final step will be an official sign-off from PPS to start the process of replacing the turf.
Jim Jordan failed badly today on his third ballot for the role of Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives. He was rejected by an even larger number of mainstream Republicans who basically felt neither threats or promises could win their support. The Republicans now have no workable plan to elect a new Speaker. In all, Jordan lost 25 Republican votes, leaving him far short of the 217-vote majority he needed. Democrats nominated leader Hakeem Jeffries. Democratic Representative Catherine Clark called Trump supporter Jordan, who refused to certify the 2020 presidential election results, quote, a threat to democracy, end quote. She continued, we need a speaker worthy of wielding the gavel, end quote. But after two failed votes, Jordan's third attempt did not end any better. Today's vote was 194 for Jordan, his lowest tally yet, and 210 for Jeffries, with two absences on each side. Republicans control the House by a narrow margin, so candidates can only lose a few votes, and there is no Republican at present who can clearly win the 217 votes needed to become Speaker. The stalemate has shut down the U.S. House for more than 2 weeks, and some of the lawmakers in the meeting called on Jordan to drop out of the race. Ultra-conservative allies of Jordan rejected the possibility of giving the interim Speaker, Patrick McHenry, the power to bring the House back into session, and conduct crucial business. Some Republicans are worried the House could essentially stay closed until the mid-November deadline for Congress to approve funding or risk a federal government shutdown. Democratic leader Jeffries reiterated that the party is, quote, ready, willing, and able to partner with more traditional Republicans on a path to reopen the House, particularly as Congress is considering President Joe Biden's aid package for Israel and Ukraine.
The U.S. House has no speaker. Federal and state leaders visit Israel. And hate crimes are on the rise since the Israel-Hamas war began. With those stories and more, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We made the pitch to members on the resolution as a way to lower the temperature and get back to work. We decided that wasn't where we're going to go. I'm still running for speaker, and I plan to go to the floor and get the votes and win this race.
After initially calling off his bid to become the next Speaker of the House, Ohio Representative Jim Jordan is back in the race, seeking a third floor vote in spite of losing twice before. Republican and Democratic centrists backed a resolution temporarily giving Acting Speaker Patrick McHenry expanded powers, but hard-right members blocked that, since it required cutting a deal with the other party. Concerns are growing about a pending government shutdown next month and getting aid out to support Israel and Gaza. Former Speaker Kevin McCarthy says Florida Representative Matt Gaetz and the eight Republicans who voted him out of the job failed to account for the fallout. McCarthy says expanded powers for McHenry would work, but it's not ideal.
The best thing for Republicans to do is to elect a speaker. That would solve all these problems.
After using a rare primetime address to build public support, President Joe Biden says today the White House will send a $100 billion aid request to Congress. It's expected to include funding for Ukraine, Israel, Taiwan, and the U.S.-Mexico border. Without a speaker, the House might be unable to address the package. Sidney Powell, the former attorney for former President Donald Trump, is pleading guilty to six misdemeanors connected to a conspiracy to interfere with the 2020 election in Georgia. The deal lets her avoid more serious racketeering charges, but she'll still serve 6 years probation, pay a fine, and write a letter of apology to the state of Georgia. Crucially, she has agreed to testify against her co-defendants. Meanwhile, New York Governor Kathy Hochul has traveled to Jerusalem. Hochul met with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and President Isaac Herzog to reaffirm New York's support. Her state is home to the second largest Jewish population outside of Israel, and Hochul says it was important to hear the stories and observe the conflict up close.
Solidarity, deep concern for the people of Israel, truly in the aftermath, bring home the hostages, as well as get that humanitarian aid flowing. People need it.
Michigan's state legislature will take up a state-level Voting Rights Act next week. The legislation aims to counter voter suppression, safeguard voting rights, and make it easier to vote in languages other than English. Brett Edkins with Stand Up America says these bills will protect the state from the influence of extremist politicians.
Michigan's democracy remains under very real threat. The Michigan Voting Rights Act is an opportunity to protect the freedom to vote of every eligible Michigander for years to come and ensure that Michigan is a national leader on democracy and voting rights.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira.
Department of Defense installations across the United States might be leaking chemicals known as PFAS or PFAS into the drinking water of nearby towns. Edwin J. Vieira joins us again with more on the story.
A new report finds plumes of so-called forever chemicals from Department of Defense installations are located dangerously close to groundwater sources. In New York, 13 installations that belong to three branches of the U.S. Armed Forces and the Defense Logistics Agency are in proximity to primary drinking water sources. Cleanup is underway on the majority of them, with remediation plans for the others being developed. Jared Hayes with the Environmental Working Group describes where the chemicals came from.
The primary source of PFAS into the groundwater coming from these bases has been the historic use of firefighting foam containing PFAS, known as AFFF. These foams were used for decades, primarily to put out oil and gas fires or aviation fires.
He explains these foams were washed off the tarmac and into the soil, where they could leach into groundwater supplies. Several methods, such as granular activated carbon and reverse osmosis, have shown success in removing PFAS from drinking water, but they don't break down these chemicals. New regulations have been proposed by the Environmental Protection Agency to keep people safe from PFAS. The National Primary Drinking Water Regulation would establish maximum containment levels for numerous forever chemicals. Hayes says this is important since there are numerous health impacts to ingesting PFAS.
Long-term exposure through drinking water, PFAS has been linked to development of different types of cancer. It has also been linked to immune system harms, raised cholesterol, as well as birth defects.
This year, the New York State Legislature took up a bill to require state pollutant discharge elimination system permit holders to report any amount of PFAS chemicals in their discharges, but it failed in committee. This is Edwin J. Vieira for New York News Connection.
You're listening to a fall membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $55,000 by the end of October. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines with fairness and accuracy in reporting. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali. And at 7, we have Civic Cipher. Tonight's weather will be partly cloudy. The low will be 52. Tomorrow will also be cloudy. The high will be 66. Today in history, in 1977, a plane carrying the rock band Lynyrd Skynyrd crashed in Mississippi. 6 people, including 3 band members, were killed. The quote of the day is from that band, saying, "Love is everything. Love is the only thing that will sustain you. It's the only thing that will keep you alive."
Israel says it does not plan to take long-term control over the Gaza Strip after Hamas militants are removed. Israel has been bombing areas in southern Gaza in retaliation for the Hamas attack 2 weeks ago. But Defense Minister Yoav Gallant offered a multi-stage plan that implied Israel did not intend to reoccupy the territory it ceded almost 2 decades ago. Israel occupied Gaza from 1967 until 2005. Gaza's overwhelmed hospitals have been rationing dwindling resources. Generators in Gaza's largest facility were operating at the lowest setting to conserve fuel, and some medical personnel were forced to work in darkness. Israel said supplies could be delivered to civilians as long as there were no diversions to Hamas. It is unclear if fuel for the hospital generators would be allowed to enter. Israel has evacuated its own communities near Gaza and Lebanon, putting residents up in hotels elsewhere in the country. Three Israelis, including a five-year-old girl, were wounded in a rocket attack near the Lebanese border yesterday. The Gaza Health Ministry says over 4,000 Palestinians have been killed since the war began, and more than 1,400 people in Israel have been killed, and at least 2,003 people have been taken hostage into Gaza. Over a million people have now been displaced by the war.
Advocates are suing Montana to stop a sewage facility near Yellowstone National Park. Mark Moran tells us more.
Bozeman-based Upper Missouri Waterkeeper and its members have filed a complaint in district court to stop the operation of a new wastewater treatment plant in Montana, just a few miles from Yellowstone National Park. The Montana Department of Environmental Quality approved the Deep Well Ranch Regional Wastewater System earlier this year. Through a large sewer line it approved last year, the facility will handle the plumbing waste from two large sites for KOA, the world's largest private campground franchise, near the park. Guy Alsenser, the Waterkeeper Group's executive director, says the DEQ approved the facility without taking any public comment.
The public has a right to participate in all state agency decisions, and more to the point, where they're going to dispose of the waste, about 75,000 gallons per day during the summer, is going to be spray irrigated into the air directly next to the Diamond P Ranch, and that's a problem.
The DEQ has said it takes public comment on projects when required by law, announces them when necessary, and points to a robust list of public input opportunities on its website. The wastewater treatment lagoons will be capable of storing nearly 4 million gallons of sewage, enough to fill nearly six Olympic-sized swimming pools with wastewater. Alsenser warns the facility will threaten fragile species, ecosystems, and groundwater that have made Yellowstone environmentally iconic.
We know that all these resources are fragile. We know they're connected. And we also know that there's an enormous value in our wildlife. People think about Yellowstone National Park, they immediately think about our world-class heritage and the outdoors, and yet this is allowing the build-out of a new, by its own definition, the Deep Well Ranch Regional Wastewater System.
Situated nearly 5 miles from Yellowstone National Park, the area is known as a wildlife corridor for big game species, including grizzly and black bears, elk, and wolverine. It's also a popular birthing grounds for pronghorn. This is Mark Moran for Big Sky Connection.
Portland artist space, Jaja PDX, is hosting a marathon Halloween party and artist showcase this Saturday, inviting in community members to see youth performances, dance, and multidisciplinary art. KBOO's Althea Billing spoke with the event organizers to learn more.
This weekend, a Portland-based artist space is hosting a 12-plus-hour Halloween costume party and artist showcase. Jaja PDX is located on the Central East Side and offers space and learning opportunities for artists across a diverse array of mediums. Justin O is the founder of Community Arts and Festivals, an organization helping put on the event, which is called the Factory of Dreams. He explains some of the things that Jaja PDX offers to their artist community.
Jaja PDX is a multidisciplinary art space. We basically try to create space for artists in Portland to follow whatever creative journey they want to be on. We have a ceramic studio, we have a wood shop, we have a group of visionary painters and healers who have teamed up with us in this project called The Haven, and we also founded a circus school.
The event starts at 1 p.m. on Saturday, October 21st. From 1 until 9 p.m., the event is all ages. From 9 p.m. to 2 a.m., the event is 21 plus. Justin says there's a multitude of performances and events to experience.
A bunch of our community partners who have teamed up and supported shows here and practice and utilize the space in ways that kind of supported them are coming out to perform, to DJ, to do circus performances. The Haven will be here, Illuminated Heart Yoga, Inner Eye Ecstatic Dance, Roots and Bones, Elixirs and Tinctures. We have our music studio, Wellspring Collective is going to be here. We have Art Battle and Friends of Noise is coming, and School of Rock is coming, and we're going to have DJs. There's just too many things to list, but we will have Portland Fashion Week here. We got Crispy Clowns and Twerk du Soleil and Jaja Circus all performing in the space, which is people who do anything from movement with LED or fire to hanging from the ceiling by a lira or silks or rope or trapeze. Just so many different disciplines that people bring and so many different skills and things that you'd never know about somebody if they're just walking down the street. But here at Jaja, you get to see like the magic that's within people sort of expressed outwardly.
Mariano DiOrio is one of the co-founders of Jaja PDX. Mariano says the event is important for Jaja PDX to expand what they do.
I like to say we are building the factory of dreams here. So that's what I like to the people know, that this is a space where you have the cravings and the potential to create. This is a space and it's gonna be welcoming the people that want to make their dreams happen. The event on Saturday is to raise funds for all the remodelations we have to do to the space. I wish that people know that we are here, and I wish that people know that we are open to create enough diversity to actually thrive all together here.
The Jaja PDX Factory of Dreams event starts at 1 p.m. on Saturday, October 21st at 819 Southeast Taylor Street in Portland. More information about the event and the artist space can be found online at jajapdx.com. That's JAJAPDX.com. For KBOO News, I'm Althea Billings.
The photographic works of Bill Hess are on display in Alaska, featuring Indigenous veterans. With that story and more, it's Jill Freitas with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Jill Freitas from KMBA in Anchorage, Alaska, filling in for Antonia Gonzalez. An exhibit opened Wednesday night at the Denina Convention Center that looks at the work of Bill Hess and his 40 years of photographing Alaska Native veterans. KMBA's Rhonda McBride was there for the opening.
Before you enter the main convention hall, large panels with portraits and candid photographs line the way.
Actually, when you walk in, it draws you in.
Wanda Solomon Parsons came dressed in uniform. She served two tours of duty in Afghanistan and was struck by how the photos evoke the spirituality of serving your country.
It draws you into a story, and it draws you into a personal life of an Alaskan Native veteran that served. We all have a story to tell.
And along with the photographs, you can read about each veteran's life.
I capture what I see and feel. And the feeling is every bit as important as the eye.
Bill Hess says this exhibit showcases photographs of more than 60 veterans, culled from four decades of pictures that he snapped at veteran ceremonies, as well as sit-down portraits of vets he met along the way.
I don't feel like I've photographed near enough, actually.
But long enough to know that Alaska Native veterans don't get near enough appreciation. Out of all the ethnic groups in the country, Alaska Natives have among the highest rate of service. And yet, as a people, Hess says they've been treated terribly.
These are Alaska Native Indigenous people willing to put their life on the line for a country that took it upon itself to subsume most of their country. But it's still their country.
In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
The 2023 AFN Citizen of the Year Award went to Kodiak resident Margaret Roberts on Thursday. She was nominated by the Woody Island Tribal Council and was selected by the AFN Board of Directors. She passed away in July of last year and has been praised by communities all over Alaska for her tireless dedication to the Aleutic language and dance, as well as advocating for the rights of Aleutic people and Alaskans. Born and raised in Kodiak, Roberts was known for her leadership. She served on boards for many tribal councils, including the Alaska Native Claim Settlement Act Corporation, as well as other nonprofit organizations. Roberts' daughters joined the presenters and the Aleutic dancers, a dance group Roberts created, on stage. Leslie Ann Hegelin, Roberts' oldest daughter, spoke of her mother's tireless commitment to her people and corporations, even while fighting cancer and just having had surgery.
She tells me she leaves that Sunday to Seattle for housing meetings and conference. I said, "What? Mom, you just got back from surgery. What are you thinking? You can't go. You're still weak." Mom went. It was about a week later. She looked just exhausted. Mom had selflessness and worried about everyone.
After Roberts' daughters accepted the award, the Kodiak Alutiiq Dance Group performed a native dance to honor the memory of the woman who made it possible for them to be up on the stage that day. Roberts was known in her Alutiiq language as the one who dances. I'm Jill Freitas.
You're listening to a fall membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News for Friday, October 20th, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Reed Johnson and Althea Billings. The co-producers are Josh Salem and Althea Billings, and our engineer is Laura Miller. Special thanks to Mark Moran, Jill Freitas, Edwin J. Vieira, Deborah Van Fleet, and Dr. Anthony Leisowitz. The director of the Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Ray Bodwell.
And I'm Josh Salem. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. KBOO is currently in our fall membership drive, so now is a great time to join. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Counterspin.
Yes, I know.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines.